I couldn't use Owen's name on it because you shot him, so I used your name instead. Uh-huh. You what? Oh, it's no big deal. No one cares who the writer is. You put my name as the writer? I had to put something down. So use your name. It's already done. Is it good? What? The script? The fuck you care if it's any good? I don't want my name on a script if it sucks. Lulu, it's beautiful. It is. Don't worry. I'm not going to ruin your reputation as a fucking writer. This is usually movies I love that no one talks about, but today it's TV series I love that no one talks about. I'm your host, Dan Benamor. We are talking about the 2017 to 2019 TV series Get Shorty. The show stars Chris O'Dowd, Ray Romano, Sean Bridgers, Carolyn Dodd, the great Lydia Porto, Goya Robles, Megan Stevenson, Lucy Walters, and Sarah Stiles. Get Shorty is about Chris O'Dowd, a criminal who becomes a movie producer and turns out to be very good at it, specifically because he is a criminal. The way we're going to do this to make it accessible for anyone who has not seen the show is we're going to go deep on the pilot until the commercial break, and then we're going to do the rest of the series after the commercial break. So if you have not seen the show, listen to us talk about how awesome the pilot is, stop listening at the commercial break, and come back after you binge the whole three seasons, which are on Amazon Prime right now. My guest today is the creator of this show, Davey Holmes. Davey is also a credited writer on Shameless, The Chicago Code, Pushing Daisies, In Treatment, Damages, and Law and Order. One of the reasons I wanted to do this is because I have a lot of anecdotal evidence that not enough people saw this show, and I kind of want to evangelize for it because I think it's so good. And, you know, I had what's known as the water bottle tour, where basically you have a piece of material, go out, you meet a bunch of executives. I would meet these TV executives. They would ask me what I'd been watching, and I would always say, Get Shorty, and they would say they hadn't seen it. And, you know, for me, I ended up watching the first season when it was on Netflix, and then I watched the last two seasons when they came on Amazon Prime. So I think, like a lot of people, I just didn't get epics, and that's why it took me so long to watch this thing. And, you know, I want to address also this thing about inside baseball, which is a big point of conversation with shows, you know, something like this is about the entertainment industry. Is it too inside baseball? Do you have to be from, you know, in the industry to get it? This is something I experienced. I had a pilot that CAA took out that was also set in the entertainment industry, and you know, everyone said it was too inside baseball. And so I just wanted to know, you know, sort of to start, like, for you, was that a real thing? Was there any validity to the whole inside baseball concern?
Well, the only leg up we had was that we had this IP, right? We had the title Get Shorty, the book that is beloved, and then a movie that had been made. And in fact, they made a sequel as well. So I think that was our ticket in. It was still a fear that the studio had. The studio owned the IP. The studio owned those titles. So they were incentivized to do this project, but they were still worried about it. And I was getting notes from, you know, various places that a certain joke. Oh, here's an example. True story for me, not just the show. When I told a good friend of mine who's not in show business that I had signed with William Morris, which was a huge break for me.
Yeah.
And he said, "That's great. Congratulations. Isn't that a tobacco company?" Which I thought was very funny. And so that was a joke that I put into the pilot, I think, or an early episode. And I got a note saying, please take that joke out. That's way too inside baseball. And eventually we stopped getting those notes. They stopped worrying about that, but that was a fear in the beginning.
So I'm going to jump into the pilot. We start with Amara. She is this kind of queenpin criminal figure. She's working out of this dinky casino in Nevada. We meet Miles. The first shot of Miles is his glasses reflecting the screen of a movie theater. He's there with his daughter, Shorty. We find out he's estranged from his wife. He has a discussion with his partner in crime, Lewis, whom he ends up calling Lulu later on. I don't think he calls him in the pilot, but Lewis / Lulu, he's Mormon. He's also a criminal, and he does these sort of distortions to make that work for himself. And they're talking about, when we first see them together, they're talking about Chris O'Dowd wants to change his life to be a better husband and father while they're disposing of a body. And I just, this little thing of the Lulu thing, especially in Chris O'Dowd's accent where he calls him Lulu, it sounds such like a, such a small detail that would be irrelevant, right? But that is one of my favorite parts of the show. Just that he calls him Lulu. And is it is that an O'Dowd thing? Is that a you thing? Where did that come
from? That's an O'Dowd thing. I mean, Chris brought, you know, I didn't write the character as Irish. I didn't write it for Chris. I didn't know Chris was available. We hadn't even thought that way.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was thinking maybe he was a Latino lead at that point. And when Chris came on, a lot of things changed for Chris, and he, the way he speaks, his patter, his rhythm, his sense of humor. And Lulu is one of those things. He just pitched that he would call him that. So
I love it. So we establish also Iago, who is Mara's nephew. He's got this like little man complex, which is a big source of conflict between him and Miles, Chris O'Dowd's character, and Lulu. They go to Hollywood to settle a debt or kill the guy if he won't pay. We establish Ray Romano as this like struggling B-movie producer. April Quinn is this hotshot studio executive. She used to work for Ray. They have an extremely recognizable LA meeting where everyone is very nice, but like what's going on is like very brutal. And you understand that basically Ray is finished as a producer and she is has elevated above him. Miles and Lulu find the guy they're looking for. He doesn't have the money he owes Amara. He claims he's written a great screenplay and then he tries to offer them producer credit. And then he also says, you can get points in the back end, and then Lulu shoots him, which for any writer is an incredibly good joke. and I was struck, you know, rewatching it. So I went back to rewatch the pilot after having watched all three seasons. And if you go back to the pilot, it's all there. All the characters are there. They're fully realized. There are some shows where you kind of get a sense in the pilot. It's like, they don't really know. They're sort of feeling their way through this. Maybe episode five, they'll figure this out. Mm-hmm. You had everybody locked in first episode. And I would love to just discuss your character process.
Character often, you know, it's that weird thing where you step back and you're looking at the shape of the story. And then you're zooming in and trying to figure out who these people are, what they sound like. And then you step out and see how that changes the shape of the story. And then you go back in. It's kind of going back and forth. But for me, I find the characters don't fully, it's the last piece to be fully fleshed out. What the character sounds like. And that's, of course, before you cast it. And then you cast it, and it's a whole different thing. For Amara, I had thought she had a sort of coquettish, girlish thing that would be creepy. And that was wrong. You know, we were pushing Lydia Porto to do that in those first days. And she's so great. So she was trying whatever we threw at her, she was trying, but we could all tell it was forced.
Yeah.
It didn't feel as real as she's capable of making that character. So we backed off and left her kind of just reptilian and scary. And then Lydia herself started to find ways to humanize her and ways for us to make us feel for her and even to break your heart in places. And so then we realized we steered the whole thing towards that it wasn't such a gag. It wasn't such a gag, her human side. It was more real.
Yeah, honestly, one of the better female criminal characters ever on TV. We'll talk more about her in the back half of the show. Miles takes the dead writer's script. Some of the pages are stuck together from his blood. He assaults Iago for scratching Lulu's truck, which is a shitty truck anyway. He meets his ex-wife's new boyfriend at his daughter's play. And his ex-wife tells him, nothing happens to this guy. If he gets hit by lightning, I'll know it was you. Miles reads the script and weeps. He bullshits his way into the studio lot, and then he kind of like accosts Rick. Rick is walking across the lot, and this is an element of the show I really wanted to talk about. So the reason that Miles is a good producer is because he is not afraid of anybody in Hollywood, because they are a joke compared to the actual criminals that he deals with all the time. And Hollywood is a business that in real life partially runs on fear. It runs on fear of new material. It runs on fear of sort of like this weird hierarchy that is unspoken and all this kind of just like goofy shit like that, that he sort of cuts through. And the other thing about Hollywood is that if you're someone who is confident, that also sort of boils away a lot of this shit. And So I'm really interested in the collision between the criminal elements of the show and the Hollywood elements of the show in that sense.
I mean, you know, we changed so much from Elmore Leonard's book and vision, but what you've just described is Elmore Leonard. He really hit on that in a way that's both cynical and yet very observant and funny, which is there's so much bullshitting in Hollywood.
There's
a long history in real life of thugs coming into Hollywood and doing quite well, or thuggish types. I was teasing MGM because Louis B. Mayer was apparently kind of a full-on thug. He had guys, you know, the Tin Man got poisoned from the stuff they smeared his body with, and the metal liquid that they put on him. What was it like? I forget what it was, but he ended up poisoned and in the hospital, and they sent thugs to come and try and yank him out of bed and get him back to work. And that's our studio. That's our studio for Get Shorty. You know, there's also a wish fulfillment there, which is, you know, if you've ever had a meeting where you could tell you weren't getting over because it was sort of pre-decided perhaps before you came in, or this executive took one look at you, didn't like what you were selling, and you want to break through, you want to reach across at the very least, you want to grab them and shake them. But even better would be to grab them and shake them and tell them, this is what you're going to do next. And so I assume that's applicable to anyone in any business, but certainly if you've been, you know, making your way around Hollywood, you understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the great joy of the show is that it's for, especially if you work in the business, it's incredibly fun. But I think even if you're not in the business, in any business, you can appreciate how this guy is just effective in a way that not everybody is. So Rick says he can't finance a period drama, which is what the script is. Miles goes to Amara to try to smooth things over because he assaulted her nephew. The nephew is there and he says it's water under the bridge, which of course we know means they're definitely going to murder Miles the second he gets in this car. And then he's in the car and now he's got to pitch Amara about how she can launder her money through the movie. And we understand that he has to do that to save his life if he doesn't pull it off. And so it's again a way of colliding the genre elements with the Hollywood elements. So it raises the stakes of it. We as, you know, working the business, there are pitches sometimes where you feel like my whole career depends on this pitch and it feels like life or death. But with this scenario, it literally is life or death. Miles does his whole pitch. And after a bit, she says, I like John Stamos. And that's how you know, all right, she's in. It's also a great commentary on how movies work because we already know the main character is Irish. And Chris O'Dowd is like, oh yeah, John Stamos, great idea. I also want to talk, and you have it in the pilot, and it ends up becoming a big part, obviously, the show moving forward, about the father-daughter stuff. Because this could have very easily been a show that was very surface level, it was very slick, that doesn't really have any heart to it. And I thought that you did the father-daughter stuff. Like, we meet Shorty, you know, we kind of get to know their relationship. It's done in a very grounded way. It's not melodramatic. It feels very realistic. Just that part of it felt so essential to me for the heart of the show, that it's not just sort of this glib, jokey thing about the business.
Chili Palmer is very cool. That's his thing, right? His blood doesn't boil over much. They call him a Shylock, right? He doesn't get heated up. He tries not to hurt people too much. You get the sense that he'd love to make a movie. He's interested in movies. He has a love of movies, but he doesn't get incredibly worked up about it. And in order to take this show not beyond an hour and a half, but on into the future, I felt that was one adjustment we should make, is that this guy should be passionate. He should care. He should fear. And he should have some real emotional stakes. And so that was where the idea of giving him a daughter came from, was... And not just a daughter, but like separated from his wife and all these things that in real life raise your emotional temperature. And that was what we wanted to try with this guy, to depart from Chili Palmer that way.
I think it's a critical you know, choice that really makes the show. All right, we are going to take a quick break for our sponsor. We're going to be right back. For anyone who has seen the series, stay with us. We're going to talk about the rest of the series. We'll be right back. Movies I Love That No One Talks About is brought to you by Virtual Pitch Fest. Virtual Pitch Fest is a trusted industry source that specializes in connecting screenwriters with production companies and representatives. With Virtual Pitch Fest, writers can search through an online database, almost like a dating site, to see what 500 plus participating companies are looking for. They can then send short written pitches on their scripts to chosen companies with the assurance of a guaranteed response back. That's right, guaranteed, you get an answer, you get a fair shot. That's a really critical difference with this service compared to some of the other online pitch services for writers. To date, site connections have led to 150 plus success stories, including produced films. There's actually a Bruce Willis, Megan Fox movie that was recently produced directly because of Virtual Pitch Fest. Just a writer who, you know, was relatively unknown, went on there, did a pitch. The pitch was picked up by a producer, and then that ended up becoming this movie. There's also been dozens of other script deals, many writers landing representation. If this sounds like something that could be useful to you, check out Virtual Pitch Fest at virtualpitchfest.com. All right, so we are back. So I'm restricting myself to six questions here to keep us on track time-wise. I would love to hear about how this is really a long movie, which is a criticism you hear often in the business with when you're developing TV series. This doesn't feel like a series. It feels like a movie. This feels like a long movie. Like years pass. Lulu and Rick's assistant, Gladys, they fall in love. They get married. She changes careers. He changes careers. They have a child. It feels like you've spent a lot of time with these characters in a way that is very much like a long movie as opposed to what would be sort of a more generic TV show. Can you talk about that and how that's part of, I mean, I think that's part of how TV is changing too.
Certainly serialized television has taken off. You know, in the old days of network TV, you could shuffle those episodes in any order and it largely wouldn't matter. They wanted to be able to sell them to other countries and show them in whatever order. They wanted you to be able to turn on the TV and jump in at any point and not have to go back to the beginning. Then that already was changing before we started streaming. You can watch anything at any time, and you certainly can go back to the first episode of The Sopranos and start back there no matter what's airing on TV. You can watch them all the way through it in their appropriate order. So that's a big game changer, and it's much more fun as a writer, theoretical, that I can map maybe one season out when I'm going in to sell a show. And a lot of that might stick, but I'm bluffing pretty hard. But if you make me talk about where a specific character is in season two or three or four, I mean, there's so much you learn from breaking the story and from watching the actors and how they interact and from seeing how episodes turn out. You learn so much. You know, problems that you come up against, you think, boy, this character, you know, Lewis is really, all of his stories are Miles's stories. He doesn't get his own stories. Well, let's give him his dreams. I mean, it took us breaking season one to realize that Lewis lands in LA and doesn't really know what he's doing there. Mm-hmm. He never really had any dreams to be in LA, but now he's in LA and he's looking around and he's kind of interested, but where do I fit in? And the writers, as writers, we weren't sure where he fit in. So we just dumped that on his character. That character doesn't know where he fits in. Well, that's a huge story point for this guy for 3 years. And then the joke is, as you get in later seasons, is who is it? Steve Martin's Bowfinger? Was that movie, mm-hmm. movie where, you know, the characters who just come over from Mexico, they're expert, they're masters of Hollywood by the end in just a few weeks.
Yeah.
So we kind of did that with Lewis, where, you know, even though he's on some level, you'd think a complete outsider to Hollywood, he fits in beautifully. Within a year or two, he's like, I'm kind of a manager. I'm doing all sorts of things. So yeah, that's a lot of fun, and we don't know the answers ahead of time,
right?
Quite often.
Yeah.
is the short answer.
I also really want to do a bit more on Lydia Porto as Amara. You know, I think what really I feel is special about what she's doing is that, and this might sound a little weird, but it's, she's really like a great representation figure for like the body positive movement, meaning that she is like a sexual character in this show, straight up. There's no two ways about it. She is sexual. She's confident. She's an older woman. She looks like a real woman. You know, if this was Salma Hayek or Sofia Vergara, it's not the same thing, right? The fact that she is who she is and she's a sexual figure in the show is, I think, important. And I think something that makes her really unique and part of why she's such an interesting, different kind of character. And then you have the backstory in episode 3 where she was sold to some rich guy for 5 goats and then she killed that guy. Like, she's just, it's such a rich, full meal of a character. I just would love to hear a little bit more about how you got all that stuff with her.
So who is the, in Cocaine Cowboys, why am I forgetting?
Griselda Blanco.
Griselda Blanco, right. So Griselda was, for years I've wanted to do something with a character like that. This is a real person who wore amazing 80s outfits and had a couple hundred people murdered in the course of selling cocaine. And she's a sociopath. But a fascinating, it's sort of an unusual one, starting with the fact that she's a woman and so ruthless and within that world dominant for a while. And again, I said, you know, we thought maybe she had a coquettish little girl side to her, but that we traded that in for something more nuanced that Lydia brought to the role. And there was a question, you know, I came up with the idea, wouldn't it be funny if Ray Romano's character, if they had a romance, these two? That he started as being terrified of her and that she's hitting on him. So already that's funny. But if we really want to elevate this, what if there's something genuine there? I mean, Ray called me at one point because we were getting 6 in the first season where they have, she forces him to go out for drinks. And then she says, you're coming home with me. And he says, okay. And Ray called and said, so I probably pitched him the story before we even had the script. And he said, okay, all right. I mean, he loves a challenge. And by the way, Ray really wants to fill out the character with something real. He's the last person to want just a bunch of jokes. He really wants the emotional depth. Mm-hmm. So we wrote that scene, this scene where they're at the restaurant, and we shot it, watching her tell him, you just immediately got it on some level. First of all, she was sexy as hell in that scene, I thought. And she's, in the way that Tony Soprano is sexy, right? I mean, men get a pass, this big thug, but he's so confident and he's got that twinkle. A lot of women find the actor as well as the character sexy. And she brought that in that scene. And you could, you know, maybe Rick Morweather has mommy issues or who knows what it is, but when she tells him, you never had anything like this, baby, and here's how it's gonna go, you're coming home with me tonight, and he says, okay, I'm ordering another drink, but we're doing this, I believe it. Yeah. Was like, there it is.
One of the great scenes in the series is Ray thinks that her character has died, and so he organizes like a funeral service for her. And it's like he doesn't understand that all of the other characters are so relieved that she's dead. And he set out snacks and they're like, what the fuck is going on? And he says like a little eulogy for her. And they're kind of like, hey, we're sure she's dead, right? Like, they're so happy that she's dead. And he's legitimately upset about it.
That scene is fun, partly because we haven't had those folks all together for a while. And it's so nice to get them all back together. In real life, the outtakes are very funny from that, because Ray was improvising a little bit for sections during his speech, and he was slaying Chris and Sean, who play Miles and Lewis. They could not keep it together. They're both very, very, very accomplished actors and comedians, and we were ruining take after take. And the director, Adam Arkin, was saying he could see Romano's killer instinct kick in because he wasn't backing off. he kept turning the screw and making them laugh, and he was just absolutely straight faced through the whole thing. So if you see in the scene, the guys are very dour and they're kind of looking down like they're bored, but really they're just trying to keep it together.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, O'Dowd, man. So I can't stress enough for the audience, for anyone who's seen the show, you know this. If you haven't seen the show, O'Dowd is just like a move, like an old school movie star in this, like truly in the sense of Steve McQueen, in the sense of James Garner. Like, he's so charming, and he's so charming that in season three, you shift where he really kind of breaks bad. I mean, he directly is responsible for killing people, like the killing of Track early in season three. This whole scheme with Steven Weber ultimately ends up being pretty brutal. It's almost like a darker Ocean's 11, this very kind of complex scheme. And I almost think that if it's a different actor, that is a bridge too far, that maybe we lose him a little bit. But because it's O'Dowd, that you just have to like him. It's a little bit, Clooney has this too, like, you're just with him, no matter what he does.
it's a fascinating quality that some actors have, where you just like them so much that they can behave pretty horribly and you're on their side still. And you know, it can be useful for an actor. Some actors have the opposite quality.
Yeah.
You don't like them, you don't trust them. And that can be very useful too, but you're right, not in this role. In this role, everybody we looked at, we were weighing what do they bring to it? And specifically, are they likable and charismatic enough that they can be, and yet also can turn on, they can be scary. And Chris, I mean, obviously is incredible at all that. He can in the same scene go back and forth. I mean, I think he specifically loves to do it. He loves to be charming and light. That scene in episode three, you just I forget if you talked about it, but the scene in episode three where he's with April and he's charming her and he's seducing her, really. She thinks it's a date. And then he will ruin you. And it's for a minute, you're terrified. And then he says, but it won't come to that. And it's just a whiplash because he's been so charming and so scary all within the same 10 seconds. It's really exciting to see someone who can do that.
I think the accent helps too. It's like this Irish, there's a very warm, reassuring sense of the accent. So when he sort of threatens you, you're almost like not even sure it's a threat. It takes you an extra beat sometimes because he'll do it in a nice way. And he's like, well, it'd be a shame if it, you know, that happened.
100%. We knew the first scene, the first day watching him, the director and I were looking at each other like, holy shit, this show is going to be really good.
Yeah.
You know, we thought it was going to be, we were excited about it. But when we saw Chris doing his thing day one, we were like, wow, this is going to be a really cool show.
Yeah. I want to talk about the ending. So the ending, we've mentioned The Sopranos a couple times here. It really made me think of The Sopranos ending thematically, because Lulu tells Miles pretty much like, hey, look, be present here right now. Like, they're having this nice moment. They're sort of both with these women that they love. You know, Lulu now has had children. Like, but we also know that Miles is in danger. He's been warned, like, hey, you know, kind of watch out for your windows. Don't stay away from the windows. And he's bought this like very LA attitude place and he says, my whole place is fucking windows. And we see this coyote right before the ending. You see this coyote that's there that is sort of a payoff from earlier stuff and represents this looming danger he has of being kind of caught for a murder that he's done. And it's very much like The Sopranos, where Tony is finally enjoying this moment with his family in the last episode of The Sopranos. And we sort of don't know when the hammer is going to drop on him, but we really do know that it's going to happen at some point. It might not be that moment. It might be a moment later, but it's going to happen. And it sort of becomes a message about life, right? Like, be here, be present, be now, appreciate your loved ones. This is what matters, because eventually you are going to die. And it might not be the way that Chris O'Dowd is going to die, but, you know, he is going to die and he's kind of got to be there and enjoy this moment. It really felt almost like a thematic cousin of that in a way to me. Is that, 100%. Does that resonate for you?
Oh yeah. I'm hugely influenced by that series. Terry Winter's a friend of mine. That series is never that far from the back of my brain. And certainly there were seasons of The Sopranos that I thought maybe were the ending to the show. By the way, the HBO would always wait like 2 years to pick up the next thing anyway. So it always seemed like maybe that was the last episode of The Sopranos. And some of them ended kind of the way we ended with Miles, where, again, obviously the season finale of The Sopranos as well, it's up in the air, but the sense of danger looming. So not only is it, as you say, applicable to all of us living in the moment, but to those who live their lives murdering people and live in the moment, because you never know. You've got that tension, that dramatic tension following you everywhere, because you could get whacked any second, just like you've done to other people. We were talking about what's Miles's final goal? What does it look like for him if he gets everything he wants in Hollywood? And my sense was it looks something like that, where on the surface, he's arrived.
Yeah.
And yet there's always going to be that fear there. And there's always going to be, he's never going to completely escape that part of who he is.
Yeah. It made me think, because it's like, in a weird way, it felt like you were writing towards a season four, especially with Michael Malley. I feel like Michael Malley may have been the person most upset this show didn't get a season four.
He's doing great, Mike, but yeah.
But then at the same time, it is a very strong ending. Like, did you know, or did you sort of think maybe there's going to be a season four? Like, was there a plan for a season four?
I was pretty sure we weren't going to have a season four. I was getting very strong sense that we needed to wrap it up. But I wasn't sure of it. So I didn't want to make it easier on anybody to cancel the show. And also, to some degree, you follow the organic trajectory as much as you can of these people. So there's only so much you want to force a wrap up anyway.
Yeah.
I think, Iago and Ed's story is absurd for a final scene. I mean, that was like so clearly not wrapped up. It was literally a cliffhanger. I mean, because you never know. I mean, you want some cliffhangers, but yeah, that was ridiculous as a final scene. And there were a couple other storylines that were a little bit loose, but for Miles, that was not a bad place to leave him, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is our show for this week. If you want to keep up with the show, join our Facebook group at Movies I Love That No One Talks About, or follow me on Instagram at the same. If you are a monthly supporter of the show, feel free to request an episode anytime. I want to thank so much my guest, Davey Holmes. If you have not seen the show, go on Amazon Prime right now and watch this show. Until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you so much.